Welcome to Herb W. Morgan's Slaying Bulls and Bears, a podcast about economics, markets, investing, politics, and profit. Every Monday, in less than 20 minutes, Wall Street portfolio manager Herb W. Morgan distills the complex and complicated into the simple and sensical. Here's Herb now.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, May 30th, 2023. I hope everybody had a great long Memorial Day weekend. This is Herb Morgan, Senior Managing Director, Chief Investment Officer here at Cantor Fitzgerald Investment Advisors, managing the Cantor ETF portfolios. As a reminder, everything you're seeing, if you're looking at the slides and graphs, is available as podcast audio only, or if you're listening, reminder, send us an email to info@efficient-portfolios.com. We'll add you to the list. Make sure you get the slides of the deck every week. The presentation has been prepared by us, Cantor Fitzgerald Investment Advisors, for use with investors and financial advisors who are each expected to make their own investment decisions. Nothing contained in the presentation should be treated as investment advice. There are no recommendations for the purchase or sale of any securities. This is purely for informational purposes. Its accuracy, or completeness cannot be guaranteed. So we had a mixed week with basically large cap stocks led by technology rising and now showing a solid double digit 10.25% year to date. Well, everything else, small and mid cap, is kind of down to flat for the year and for the week. International markets got hit hard, down about 2.25% last week. Developed large cap international markets, that is, still up 9% for the year. So that's a positive. Emerging markets not doing quite as well. And the ACWI, the All Country World Index, the most common equity benchmark, down about 0.5% for the week, up almost 9% year to date. Bonds gave back just a little last week, high yield included there, gave back kind of in sympathy with mid cap. I always joke and call high yield mid cap with coupon. If you've listened to this broadcast for a while, you've heard that many, many times. So kind of what's interesting this year is that large caps absolutely leading the way. It's really the only game in town, but that's really because tech is such a big part of large cap. So in the midst of an economic contraction, in the midst of reduction in money supply and in a total slowdown, we also have another secular thing going on, which is this AI or artificial intelligence revolution. And the market is bidding up and rewarding those companies it sees as the likely benefactors of this. And that is what is keeping the NASDAQ up, the QQQ. It's what's keeping the S&P 500 up. But there really hasn't been any emergent players in small and mid cap for this year. And so you can see those indices, which have a much higher number of components as well, they're really not doing as much. So, you know, a lot of really smart economists, strategists, global strategists have been correctly predicting the economic slowdown as a result of the Fed action, the bank failures, all of this. And they're a little bit befuddled why the market's hung in so well. And that's because there's that other secular thing that's going on with this artificial intelligence boosting a lot of these names. So let's get into economic reports from last week. Let's start with the flash readings from S&P Global for both services and manufacturing. Manufacturing is first, about 15% of the U.S. economy, fell into contraction in May. The estimate was 50, which was the line of delineation between expansion and contraction. We're continuing to move way past the supply chain issues, fifth consecutive month of delivery time improvement, and we're moving beyond the inflationary pressure with input prices falling to the lowest reading since May of 2020. On the services side, however, the news was much better, and this was the highest reading in over a year, and services are 85% of the U.S. economy. We went up at 55.1, well ahead of the 52.5 consensus estimate. Employment increased, but despite the expansion, good news, input prices also fell. That's the lowest reading there since December. So I know we're still talking a lot about the inflation, but I really think what we should be talking more about is whether or not we are in recession. And I, as you know, I think we started in kind of March-ish in a very shallow recession that is going to be characterized by a lack of significant job losses, which is a good thing and which is what makes it relatively shallow. April new home sales were up 4.1%. The estimate was for a decline of 2.6. So that was pretty nice. An annualized pace of 683,000, really almost back to those pre-pandemic and pre-ultra low interest rate levels. And what's surprising here is despite the fact that interest rates are higher for borrowers for these new homes, there's such a limited inventory of existing homes that they're able to get these things sold and do quite well. Weekly initial claims for unemployment, which had started to rise. We find out later there was a couple of states where there was some fraud in the reporting numbers, and they're now starting to come back down. 229,000 last week. That was well below the estimate of 245,000 and continuing claims. This is why I say mild recession, perhaps without any significant job losses, which would be great. But let's get into this discussion of GDP versus GDI. And I'm not talking about that group you joined in college when you didn't join a sorority or fraternity. You were a GDI, but gross domestic income. So the GDP report was revised for the first quarter from 1.1 to 1.3. The estimate was 1.1. Personal consumption actually rose a little bit. But gross domestic income, or GDI, fell 2%, 2.3%, and that was the second consecutive quarter of decline. And the worst back-to-back drop we've seen since the beginning of the COVID pandemic, where we obviously entered into a very short-lived recession. So what exactly is the difference? GDP, we're all familiar with. We talk about it all the time on this presentation. It measures the value, the total value of production of an economy by final expenditure. We always say final goods and services. But GDI measures income earned by producing things. It could be wages, corporate profits, or taxes. And that then number has declined two quarters in a row. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean we're in recession, but it can be a very valuable method of checking and confirming your GDP numbers, which can be a bit noisy over time. They can be impacted by large government transfers like we got during the COVID pandemic recession, and then we had big, big money distribution to people and companies by the government that boosted GDP. Now, the consumer is strong. As we mentioned before, the labor market is excellent. The housing sector, despite what we saw in those new home numbers, had its eighth consecutive quarterly drop. And we've seen CapEx, capital expenditures from businesses, drop for two quarters in a row. And over time, the two of these should track very closely. But often when you see what you see here, which is two negative quarters of GDI, then the GDP numbers can sometimes be revised lower or just follow it down. In other words, the GDI tends to be the leading of the two. Nothing is perfect, nothing is definitive, but it goes back to my suggestion or my view, again, that we're in this mild recession as we speak. Okay, pending home sales, back to residential real estate for a minute, were flat. They were expected to be actually down, but they're still down 22.5% from a year ago. Again, it's high interest rates making the houses less affordable, as well as very limited inventory and availability. But personal income and spending, still strong. Personal income rose 0.4% for April. Personal spending was up 0.8% for April. When you don't have big job losses, you're not going to get necessarily a deep recession at all. We also got, very important, the PCE deflators. So personal consumption expenditure is the preferred inflation measuring gauge of the U.S. Federal Reserve. And as you can see, the blue, which is the PCE index, actually eked up a little bit. And the red, which is the core, which backs up food and energy, also is kind of flatlining to eking up a little bit. Both were up 0.4%. And because of this, the futures markets for the June 14th meeting are now suggesting that there may be another rate hike. I don't think there needs to be, but I'm not on that that committee, the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, they're now predicting a 60% chance of a hike at the June 14th meeting. That's 2 weeks from today, which is up significantly from just a 22% chance a week ago. So we'll have to watch that and see. But that number was quite disappointing, to be sure. University of Michigan consumer sentiment fell from 63.5 all the way to 59. The estimate was for 58. So I guess it was better than expected. Current conditions fell. Expectations fell. And it was all about the debt limit standoff. But of course, that's been resolved at this point. And of course, the various media outlets of the both political sides have gone on to try to get us to watch and click to tell us that this is unlikely to pass and there's dissent and nobody, you know, all that. That's false. The president has agreed to sign what will come out of the House, and he will get his party members to vote, and it will get through the Senate, and the president will sign it. That's just the way it works. And speaking of that debt ceiling bill, here's basically what's in there. Suspends the debt limit so the Treasury can now issue debt to fund operations through January of 2025. So that's about a little over a year and a half. It caps and cuts non-defense discretionary spending. Remember, our budget biggest things are Social Security and Medicare. Those are really not, they're not part of a budget. They just are must spends because the money is owed to the participants. But it puts spending flat in 2024 because this year is a big increase, and then a 1% increase in 2025. It brings back some unspent COVID-19 relief funds. It's hard to imagine a case where, hey, the pandemic is over. We've got these billions of dollars. Some folks wanted to spend them anyway. Given the debt situation, the president wisely agreed that those should come back. Blocks some of the student loan forgiveness and restarts collection of principal and interest on some student loans that have been paused, and that happens this summer. It also adds some work requirements to some welfare programs that kick in after a period of time for people of prime working age, repeals some green energy tax credits, and rescinds some prior increases to funding for the Internal Revenue Service mostly for enforcement and investigation. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Remember, you can get this on your smart device or by subscription. I will be back to you again in 1 week.
Thank you for listening to Slaying Bulls and Bears. If you'd like to download the slides for this week's podcast, go to www.efficient-portfolios.com and join our mailing list. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, rate us online, and share with a friend if you found this helpful. See you next week!